Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome into Soccer Morning. We're ready to go. New week of shows, new week of soccer, new week of everything. It all smells very good or something. I don't know. I had something quippy and clever on a Monday to get you started, and then it just went out of my head. And so we just begin with this. It's a big show for you. We're going to review the weekend happenings. We're looking to grab a guest to take a look at England specifically. I think I'm still waiting on confirmation of that, but in the meantime, we can get underway with some news. Also want to set you up for phone calls later on in the show. We will be taking all of your thoughts and questions and concerns and comments and observations and analysis from the weekend, both MLS, well, both, all MLS, EPL, Bundesliga underway. That's a thing that happened this weekend. Well, I don't even have that in my headlines. That's an oversight on my part. Christian Hennage will join us. There we go. I'm sorry. My confirmation came through and I didn't see it. Christian Hennage will join us to talk about the Premier League weekend. So let's go ahead, dive into the headlines. Make sure you're all prepared for that chat. First and foremost, MLS. That's first and foremost for me. If it isn't for you, I apologize. It's what we're going with first. A couple of big results from the weekend. Sporting Kansas City coming back from two goal deficits to beat Vancouver at home at Sporting Park 4-3. Paulo Nakamura with the winner. Not necessarily the man you would expect to score the goals to put them through, get them a big win over the Western Conference leader. And now, looking at the standings, Sporting Kansas City, best in the league on points per game, third place in the Western Conference, but with a bunch of games in hand on the leaders, LA Galaxy and Vancouver. Speaking of the LA Galaxy, they get a 2-1 statement win over FC Dallas in Frisco, Texas. This is a Galaxy team that has struggled to win on the road throughout the 2015 campaign. Robbie Keane, Giovanni Dos Santos combining to put the goals in the net and lead the LA to a big win in Texas. The New York Red Bulls making statements as well. 3-0 winners over Toronto FC at Red Bull Arena. The biggest thing for New York is that they completely quieted Sebastian Giovinco, leading candidate for the MVP this season. Didn't do much on the road against the Red Bulls in an Eastern Conference clash. And just a little bit of a ding to TFC's form at the moment. They are now in fifth place while the Red Bulls are creeping towards DC United with 39 points to DC United's 44. Remember, DC United losers on Thursday night against NYCFC. Seattle, are they back? Maybe they're back. Are they back? Obafemi Martins is back, scored twice in a 4-0 Seattle romp over Orlando City Soccer Club. That game was at CenturyLink Field, a full house on hand to watch Martins come back and lead his team to victory. We'll see if this means something for the Sounders moving forward. Certainly, Orlando City has defensive issues. They didn't play well. In fact, Seattle, with 12 shots on goal, absolutely dominated in that match. The Philadelphia Union and the Chicago Fire, you're thinking, wait, this name has no bearing whatsoever on the standings because they're both terrible and they're at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, and why are you talking about it? Well, first of all, the Union are really only 4 points back in the playoff hunt. Be difficult, but they are there. Meanwhile, Chicago's only a point back of Philadelphia, and that's after last night's 3-3 draw, a thrilling match. Certainly the last 20 minutes of that were on fire. Sean Johnson with a bunch of great saves for Chicago. Despite the scoreline, goalkeeper of the week performance from Sean Johnson kept them in it. They went and got a very controversial equalizer scored by Kennedy Omoenike on a ball that looked like it was out of bounds two different times and perhaps even handled by Mike McGee on the last sequence. I had somebody tell me that the AR was perhaps watching a flyover, but I'm not sure if that's the case or not. Premier League results. Manchester City in the clash of the weekend beating Chelsea 3-0 at the Etihad on Sunday. A big win for City. They are certainly trying to establish themselves as the league contender for the title this year. Perhaps Chelsea taking a step back. It is two matches. We'll talk to Christian Hennage about this and ask him. I mean, Jose Mourinho deflecting. This particular game, he sort of made his bed with the whole doctor nonsense and then substitutes John Terry, goes on television after the match in the post-game interview, and paints a picture of a game that nobody else saw, in a game in which Chelsea was the better team in the second half, Certainly not what I saw when I watched that match. It's Arsenal with their first win of the year after opening the season with a loss. They get an own goal to beat Crystal Palace in a game that Arsenal needed to get their season underway. Manchester United squeaking by Aston Villa on Friday, which is a very odd place for a game. They decided to put games on Friday now in the Premier League. That's the thing that they do. Everton 3-0 winners over Southampton in that particular match. Looking at the rest of these results, West Brom and Watford played to a game nobody ever wants to talk about again. Tottenham and Stoke 2-2, not a great way to go for Spurs at home. Leicester City beating West Ham 2-1. West Ham coming down after that defeat of Arsenal at the Emirates last weekend to open their season. It's going to be up and down for them, I imagine. UEFA is asking FIFA to investigate a smear campaign against Michel Platini. UEFA has complained to FIFA about an alleged attempt to discredit Platini, who is currently the favorite, to replace Sepp Blatter as the head of FIFA when that election comes up next February. A newspaper-style article sent anonymously this month to German-language media was titled Platini Skeletons in the Closet. UEFA General Secretary Gianni Infantino told the Associated Press on Sunday that he asked FIFA to investigate if the document came from its headquarters as a rift deepens between Blatter and Platini. There is a letter. It's out there. This is quite scandalous stuff happening because, you know, when the powerful people in football go at each other, it's pretty ugly. Sergio Ramos has gotten a 5-year deal at Real Madrid that will keep him there at the Bernabeu, despite interest from Manchester United and a couple of other teams. Speaking of Spain, Barcelona going into the second leg of the Spanish Super Cup against Athletic Bilbao today with a 4-0 deficit. Can they overturn that deficit today? Certainly worth a watch. Game kicks off at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And the U.S. Women's National Team started their World Cup victory tour with an 8-0 destruction of Costa Rica in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Megan Klingenberg scoring and waving a terrible towel, and they all had a good time as the U.S. women get underway with celebrating their World Cup title. All right, let's take a break. We'll step aside. Good way to set the stage for Christian Henich, who will join us to go over all of the happenings from the weekend. We'll probably sprinkle in some MLS as well, so don't go anywhere. Soccer Morning, WorldSoccerTalk.com. The race to win the MLS Supporters Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from 6 of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com. This Sunday is the Battle of DPs as Steven Gerrard, Andrea Pirlo, Giovanni Dos Santos, Frank Lampard, and Robbie Keane battle it out in a clash between the LA Galaxy and New York City FC. I'll be calling the game on Rabble.tv, and I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the 90 minutes at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast? Call one of your team's games. It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern for LA Galaxy versus New York City FC on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
We are back on a Monday. Big show for you. Appreciate you guys joining in. We may have a surprise guest later in the show. I'll let you know about that. But in the meantime, we have a very excellent guest. Kristen Hennage is on the line with us now from jolly old England. Hello, Kristen. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks, Jason. How are you?
I'm well. Let's talk about the second round of the Premier League 2015-16 underway. First and foremost is Sunday's match between Chelsea and Manchester City at the Etihad. A game that was loaded with, is someone going to take the lead on the title race, et cetera, et cetera. It's very early for all of those things, but plenty of drama out of those events on Sunday. Some of it related to Jose Mourinho. Some of it related to Fernandinho's elbow. Some of it related to the fact that Sergio Aguero is just very good at soccer.
Yes, that's a very good way to put it. I think what you saw is one team kind of operating at high momentum in Manchester City and one in Chelsea that's had a bit of an awkward summer. If you compare it to say, 12 months ago, I thought, particularly in the transfer market, Chelsea were exceptional. They knew exactly what they wanted. They went out and got it in players like Cesc Fabregas, whereas this summer I thought they'd maybe stuffed it a bit. They weren't too sure what they wanted. And now, kind of with a few weeks left in the window, they're frantically trying to get Baba Rahman through and sort out the left-back issue. And, well, it's actually a right-back issue that's the problem, but find someone to cover for Azpilicueta, who they want at right-back. And for me, I think, you know, that kind of highlights the importance of a summer, because if you look at Manchester City, they went out, they knew they wanted Raheem Sterling, they did the deal fairly quickly, he managed to get a full pre-season with the squad, and certainly he's not at the peak level you would want, but he certainly looks more integrated into this squad than Chelsea signings.
Yeah, there's always that question, right? You know, how early do you get your signings done? Do you get those players settled? And how much does that impact your early season as you try to build that momentum? And look, this is likely to be a race that comes down to the wire. I mean, it maybe Chelsea separated themselves last season, but you know, maybe Chelsea hasn't taken enough steps to make sure that they're on the same level of their 2014-15. So it's going to be a couple of points here or there. Is this already an advantage that City can really grab onto? And if they can keep up their form, we may be talking, you know, we may be talking up City and by Christmas time.
I think it's very rare that you see a champion crowned by Christmas, be that kind of figuratively or literally. I think what it does is it shows City where they can be at in terms of their level this season. I mean, Vincent Kompany kind of stands out for me as someone who maybe had a difficult season last season, and yet we're looking at him now. He's got 2 goals in 2 games. As he said afterwards yesterday, more importantly, 2 clean sheets. Mm-hmm. And he looks almost back to his best. And I know in the summer he did a lot of upper body work kind of individually away from the squad, and it seems that certainly paid off, because there was no chance that Diego Costa was bullying him yesterday. I thought Kompany certainly won that battle quite significantly. And I think that's really what City have to take from this. Not the idea that, okay, this could start as a run that will have it won by Christmas. I think it shows them where they can be this season and the level they need to strive for.
Sure, certainly a club that's always got something swirling around it, needs to be positive out of the gates. Meanwhile, Chelsea, and you mentioned Diego Costa. I'll come to Jose Mourinho, some of his comments, some other decisions that he made in a minute. But Diego Costa, I mentioned this. I did a thing yesterday for Rabble, and I mentioned how much fun it is, how much I have a love-hate relationship with Diego Costa. He's obviously a very good player. He's a good striker, Christian, but he's a figure that's easy to loathe when he's out there causing trouble. And yet you kind of feel for him, because Fernandinho did come in pretty hard with the elbow. Was that a red card for you?
I think it was. I thought it was quite nasty. And I think his reaction told you that there wasn't much remorse there, and perhaps there was a degree of intention there as well. I think, as well, if it's maybe not Diego Costa, then something happens there. Mm-hmm. I think in many ways it was the victim that kind of stopped the red card coming out and essentially costing City an important player for the rest of the game.
Well, isn't that fascinating, though, that Diego Costa has a reputation, obviously, and that's going to feed into whether or not a referee pulls out a red card. It's probably not fair, you know, all things being equal, but that's sort of what happens when you are the type of player Diego Costa is, and he's very much a guy who works to get under the skin of defenders and opposing players when he's out there to gain his advantage. All right, so we come to Jose now. I mean, again, good feelings for City, big win at home, biggest crowd in Etihad history, et cetera, et cetera. Jose Mourinho, after the match, spun that game in a way that I found fascinating, saying that he thought Chelsea was the better team in the second half. He'd obviously taken off John Terry, which was a big decision. Are we seeing Jose lose it a little bit at Chelsea? I mean, that's odd considering they won the title last year, and he talks about how much he loves this club. But it's been pointed out that he has a pattern at various places. He'll go for a good one, two, 3 years, not even that much, one or two years, and then it all starts to unravel.
I would certainly say he's not a long-term manager. I think he's kind of bounced around from club to club after a certain point. The old quote of Bella Gutman, never stay longer than 3 years, because that's when your ideas stop kind of permeating onto the players' minds. I think he certainly looks a lot more dishevelled than we remember him. The hair's a little bit scraggly, the dress perhaps isn't as sharp. But I'm inclined to think maybe we are starting to see someone who's a little bit unsettled and maybe isn't as cultured in his mind games as we once thought. Equally, I think maybe we overestimated it. Maybe we saw too much in there. We interpreted his actions a bit like the famous quote with Eric Cantona about the seagulls and the trawlers. We gave it a meaning that perhaps wasn't one there from inception. And I think, look, it seems to permeate all aspects of the club now. I mean, the match report from the club talked about the Ramirez goal as being the main talking point of the game, and that was their lead, which I found quite funny, perhaps written by Mourinho himself. You never know. I think that he needs to perhaps take a look inward, though, because at the minute, he's causing a lot of his club's problems, and normally he's the one who shields them from this.
Well, I mean, again, this is whether or not he is playing that game of deflection that he is quite famous for, and, you know, with the whole doctor's trainer scandal or whatever you want to call that, drama, nonsense coming into this game, now leading out of this game, it's the odd nature of how he's looking at it. It's certainly talking about the Diego Costa situation, and then talking about the red card. And again, coming to John Terry, do you think this has wider ramifications? Is he sending a message here to Terry and to the wider team, or is it just a matter of in this game he saw something that really did necessitate sitting his captain down?
I think it's the latter. I think that was the problem. I mean, look, it was just last season when we talked about John Terry's resilience as a player and his ability to constantly prove his doubt is wrong. And yet, come the end of yesterday, we're saying, oh, he's too old, he's too slow, he's finished. I don't think he is. I think he just struggles with an incredibly pacey and talented striker in Sergio Aguero, and there's no shame in that. I think perhaps they could have set him up slightly better tactically and helped him out a little bit, but again, maybe they weren't able to do that, and so they've decided to make a change. I think to say that this is kind of something greater, though, is perhaps building something that's not really there.
Yeah, certainly. The rest of the league, Christian, anything stand out for you? I mean, certainly Arsenal getting a win is a good thing for them, even if it wasn't the most convincing at Selhurst Park. And then, let's start there. What do you make of Arsenal so far? Because, again, losing last week at home to West Ham, coming into this weekend, this is a club that if it doesn't go right away can sort of be – I mean, like, they're going to win their matches against lesser opponents, but they need to really be on top of the confidence game if they're going to be a title contender.
Exactly. They've had a hit already, and some people reaffirm the idea that they're not mentally strong enough to win the title with that defeat against West Ham. And I don't think a victory against Palace is going to rectify that thought and change people's minds and change the doubters' minds. Admittedly, you know, it was paid back to 1-1. They rode their luck slightly. There was a little bit of kind of an obstacle for them to overcome, but it's going to take more than that for them. I think, you know, the talk of Benzema possibly joining is another moot issue that could influence them in terms of their ability to win the title. But the truth is they need to become more consistent. They need to be more ruthless. And I think you're not really going to see that until those difficult games that they have at home later in the year, perhaps leading up to Christmas. I think the second part of the season is normally when Arsenal have kicked into gear. The problem is the title-chasing pack are normally well away from them by now.
So Arsenal with their first win of the year, Manchester United with a second 1-0 victory this time at Villa Park. I didn't get the chance to see much of that game. It's all the way back on Friday. Christian, it's sort of out of the mind at this point. But Manchester United, look, 6 points is 6 points. I guess it doesn't matter how you get it necessarily, but people will question whether or not they are firing at all on all cylinders and are able to reclaim their position as a title contender, certainly as a top team in this league.
Of course, because they've also spent an exorbitant amount of money this summer. Under Louis van Gaal, they've spent more than Ajax have in their entire history, which is a frightening number when you think about it. I think the concern is as well that they don't seem to have a recognised striker, right? That Wayne Rooney looked quite laboured on Friday night against Aston Villa, and behind him is James Wilson and Javier Hernandez. I think Hernandez isn't really seen as an option, and James Wilson is still incredibly young. So he either has to push forward with one of those three that he has now, or then convince the board to go back out and spend even more money. And who you get at this stage also remains to be seen, because it doesn't seem as if Thomas Müller is an option, as Bayern don't really want to sell him. So it's a difficult period for Manchester United. I feel as if they're in transition still slightly. But the results can't be in transition. That's the difficulty he faces. They have to win things this season to validate the fact that he spent so much money.
All right, let's turn to Everton. They go away from home and beat Southampton 3-0. Romelu Lukaku scoring twice. Ross Barkley with a goal and solid performances all around. I never really have a clear sense of who Everton is. They drew last weekend against Watford in their opener. But what is the prospects for Roberto Martinez this season?
It would seem a bit like Ross Barkley: good games and bad games. I think the problem he has is that because that squad is really founded on some young talent, it's going to have those days that maybe aren't so perfect and other days where they sweep aside like Southampton away. And I think it's about him kind of extracting the raw talent in there and giving it a consistency. Now, that's kind of the issue you have with players of that age, is that they're very much fresh on their journey. Even players like Lukaku has been playing for 16. He's going to still need to learn some things. There's still elements of his game that need polishing. And the problem is that for Everton, who don't really spend much, and again, haven't really spent much this summer either, have they really got the depth to rely on a consistent, inconsistent youngster like that? I think there's simply not money to invest further, if you believe Bill Kenwright. And that's clearly an issue that's boiling over with the fact that they flew that plane over the stadium before kickoff. I still find it amazing that that's how we solve problems these days, is to buy a plane and attach a sign to the back of it. But I think that's another discussion. I think what they have to do is they have to decide really how they're going to operate, because yes, it's great that they keep buying these talented youngsters like John Stones and last week Mason Holgate, but you've also got Roberto Martinez vehemently fighting against the idea of Chelsea buying him. Right. Realistically, Chelsea buying him is the only way he's going to fund new players.
Yeah.
And so it is kind of that vicious cycle of rearing someone with exceptional talent, knowing that really they're likely to fund the next crop that you hope develop into a similar player.
Yeah, that's the lot that Everton finds themselves in. But it brings us to another question. I mean, Everton is where they are, and I'm not sure that, look, no fan is going to just accept that. They're going to want to push on and take the next step, but they also have a realization that they're not competing with the City's, United's, Chelsea's, Arsenal's on a monetary basis. Meanwhile, in London, in North London, you have Tottenham, and they are maybe not quite on that level, but they certainly spend a lot more money than most of the teams in this league. They have a lot more going for them than a lot of teams in this league. They're going to build a new stadium, et cetera, et cetera. And now I'm seeing talk, Christian, of whether or not the gap between the top four and a team like Spurs is actually widening, and they haven't had a great start. They lose to Manchester United, okay, fair. But they draw it home to Stoke, and now there's those worries again.
There is, and it's almost like Everton. It's that inconsistency in the idea that Spurs will inevitably find a way to snatch something terrible from the jaws of victory. It's a work in progress, is the best way I could put it, because, again, Pochettino's brought in a new central defender in Toby Alderweireld, who, in fairness, knows Jan Vertonghen very well from the time at Ajax, and I think eventually will forge something quite impressive. I am sometimes a little bit bemused by their transfer dealings. I mean, they've bought Kieran Trippier this summer, someone who for me offers the same assets as Kyle Walker but also has the same deficiencies. who again has the same assets as DeAndre Yedlin, but also the same deficiencies. So to buy three of the same type of right back, it doesn't really make sense. And yet, you could argue maybe it's an impulse purchase, the fact that Yedlin in particular was trading quite high after the World Cup. It was a chance to, you know, maybe operate in the US market, having a US international on the team. But he's not playing at the minute. He's not even getting on the bench. And that's just it's a bizarre situation, because you think, well, then he needs the loan move, and it doesn't seem like they're really looking to orchestrate anything for him. So it's, at times it seems as if they're not really shopping with much in mind. Shopping when they're hungry, which they say you should never do.
Well, it seems as though this is an operation that works less about the football side sometimes than the business side. Almost as if these players are stock to be sold and bought, and that's that. There's an element of that to the world's game, of course, to the market. But you're also trying to put these players into your first team and go win matches. I mean, I think of Roberto Soldado, who they just sold for something like £12 million, which to me sounds like highway robbery on Spurs' part. But that again, it kind of feeds into this notion that they are a club who's incredibly savvy about these things sometimes, but doesn't put together a team to actually take the next step.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Eric Lamela, there's someone who is the club's record signing, I believe, and really does not fit that team well at all. And that's something you just have to question, is how much of it is them thinking they're getting a good deal, and how much of it is them saying, okay, does this player fit in with what we're trying to do? Is this the right player for the style we're playing? So to seemingly replace Gareth Bale with Eric Lamela didn't really make sense at the time, in the same way that bringing Roberto Soldado in at such a late stage in his career, kind of closer to 30 than 25, didn't really make sense. And that's, I think, where Spurs need to improve, is they need to really identify an ethos, and then shop accordingly and make it so the manager fits with that. I think certainly the managers that they've procured in the last few years, like Pochettino, they've given them certain assets, but at times it felt like they're lurching from one thing to another. Sherwood wasn't continental enough, and then Pochettino is the continental option, and then maybe they'll find out that he's not British enough for them, and it'll start that vicious triangle that kind of surfaced with the Redknapp and Villas-Boas era.
We're going to talk MLS with Kristen here in a couple minutes, but just let me tip in. We have confirmed Sean Johnson, goalkeeper for Chicago Fire, will join us at 9:45 a.m. Eastern. So if you're listening now, stick around. Make sure you listen to that. Sean Johnson put on an incredible performance against the Philadelphia Union last night to help his team secure an away point. All right, a couple of matches left that maybe we can brush by quickly, Kristen. Swansea City, 2-0 winners over Newcastle. Newcastle is my one of my favorite Premier League teams. I don't mean that in the sense I root for them at all, just because they're always dramatic. There's always something going on there. You know, their season starts so far, and certainly the way Swansea has looked after their draw at Stamford Bridge last week.
Yeah, I thought they've been incredibly impressive. I think what you're seeing is the benefit of consistency and continuity, in terms of really they've only made one or two major signings this summer, and only one of them in Andre Ayew has kind of established himself into that first team already. And so there's not a huge upheaval there. There's not a new kind of style or anything being learned. It's the same as last season, so there's a familiarity there. And then credit to Ayew, I think he's fitted into that expertly. You could argue that Swansea knew what they wanted from a player in that position and then went out and got him, all on a free transfer as well, which makes it just that much more impressive. Yeah. I think that's perhaps what you were seeing played out at the Liberty Stadium at the weekend, was a team that knew exactly what they wanted to do and how they wanted to do it, and subsequently the players the same, against a team in Newcastle that are still really in the formative stages under Steve McClaren. They still want to make more signings. They still want to almost teach these players how to play McClaren's way, and that's going to take time, and there's going to be some really horrible days like Saturday where Daryl Yanmat is really roasted by Jefferson Montero, mm-hmm. who equally is looking more impressive with each passing game. So that's, I think, the benefits ones you've had in giving Gary Monk time, and also bringing in someone who knew the club to begin with. So it wasn't a huge transition to begin with. I think that's where you have to really credit Swansea, is they really do due diligence on the managerial choices they make.
I wasn't sure that they were going to be able to replace Bonnie. And I mean, just naturally, in terms of the flow of the team, because you can sell it. They have to sell him. I mean, Manchester City comes in and offers that much money, you have to sell Wilfred Bony. But that's a club that just can't snap their fingers and find a replacement necessarily.
Well, no, it certainly seems that. But then, you know, I think what they've been clever to do is to identify what Bony gave them and then find similar assets in a player, not an identical player in Baffett and Bigomi, but I think they'd almost started the planning before he even left, Wilfred Bony. So, again, it's that forethought that I think we sometimes underrate in clubs, the likes of Southampton, who already know who will replace their key players before they've gone. And it's a staple of kind of transfer doing. Jean-Michel Aulas, the Lyon president, used to say that, you know, you should always have the player that you wish to replace your star with at the club before you sell him, so that it means the transition is that much easier, so they know the football club, and it just makes everything a little bit simpler for everyone involved.
All right, like I said, we are going to talk to Sean Johnson here coming up in a couple of minutes. So we're going to take the opportunity with Kristen to talk about the MLS weekend. Kristen obviously writes on MLS a lot. You find his work, find him on Twitter, KHENEAGE. Kristen, let's lots of things to talk about here. I mean, obviously, Seattle with a 4-0 win to get back on the right side of things. OBFMU Ortons is obviously crucial to what they're going to do moving forward. We have that result from Thursday, which was DC United losing to NYCFC, Sporting with a comeback. I think I want to start, though, with the LA Galaxy. And I'll admit that I have a bias towards the Galaxy in the sense that if anybody is showing well and the Galaxy are showing well, I tend to think that they're the better team and that they're going to be the MLS Cup champion in the end, because they've more often than not proven that they're capable, that they have the right mentality to do that. Am I wrong to have them as my favorites right now?
No, I don't think so, because they're not a perfect team. There's defensive frailties in there, certainly. And Donovan Rickic really doesn't inspire that much confidence in me personally. Clearly he does in Bruce Arena, because he keeps finding a way to bring him back to LA. But that attack is just absolutely scintillating. It's arguably the best in Major League Soccer at this very moment. And that's typified by the fact that, you know, you've got Robbie Keane with 6 in 10. You've got Giovanni Dos Santos linking up with him, I think, for 3 goals in 2 games. That in itself tells you that this team is incredibly stacked with talent. And so there's nothing new to be learned there. I think the concern for teams now is that how do you stop that? Because FC Dallas are a very good team. I think they've been very impressive this season. And funnily enough, you know, the last time they faced LA, they managed to beat them. Yeah. And yet with the addition of Gerrard, the addition of Dos Santos, who we touched on there, it's just pushed this Galaxy side to another level. It's moved them up a few tiers, and it's now up for the remaining teams to catch up. And I think it's going to be a difficult task for a lot of them.
Absolutely. Now, we should mention that FC Dallas was without Mauro Diaz. He's a major component of what they do. That's got to be FC Dallas's concern as they push forward, is if Mauro Diaz misses time, because he has been particularly frail over the course of the last couple of seasons. They have to be more than just Fabian Castillo and Akindele and Blas Perez and a couple other options. Hollingshead has been good, but you're going to need a playmaker in the middle. All right, speaking of playmakers in the middle, the man who's probably second or perhaps first on some people's MVP ballot is Benny Failhaber. Now, he didn't have a fantastic day against Vancouver, but Sporting showed what they're made of with that comeback victory. I think this actually shows a little bit about Vancouver as well, Kristen. I think they're a little naive at this point, and clearly there's some lack of discipline. You shouldn't have two goal leads and lose a match. I don't care if you're at home or not, or on the road or not.
No, exactly. And, you know, we talked about there with the Galaxy, kind of their defensive frailties being negated by the strong attack. I think the problem Vancouver have is that the attack simply just isn't strong enough to counteract the defence's problems. I've never personally been that sold on Pamudakar at the back. I think he doesn't really inspire confidence. And I think that's something that Clay Robinson is going to have to, Carl Robinson, excuse me, is going to have to try and fix in the offseason. He's going to need to see if they can't get some talent. I mean, you look at Seattle being able to procure Roman Torres last week, yeah, Someone who I've heard described as the best defender in Colombia. They need to go out and really kind of, you know, test their scouting team and say, look, we need a top quality centre back. Perhaps even someone who garners a DP contract. Maybe it's it's that big a need for them. It's just finding the talent. That's always the issue. I think identifying the problem isn't necessarily that hard. It's how you cure it is where teams tend to fall down.
Absolutely. So Vancouver with a little bit of a distressing loss, again, on the road, but considering the way that game went, they should have probably gotten out of there with three points. Elsewhere in MLS, you mentioned Seattle adding Roman Torres. That's probably the most important. It might end up being, depending on how Seattle's season goes the rest of the way, one of the most important signings of the window. And yet what they showed on Sunday is that they are still capable of scoring the goals. They went goal shy for a while, but Obafemi Martins makes them a much, much better attack, Chris. And it's unbelievable.
He does. I mean, I tweeted out last night, sometimes it feels like he's being held up by strings. His balance is that impressive. I think the return of him is important, as is Clint Dempsey. In the wider picture, though, I think this shows the importance of good mid-season signings. Nelson Valdez, again, is a really good pickup. I really like that move. They've also got Andreas Ivancic to come in and add some more creativity to what looks on paper, if you can manage to put Dempsey, Martins and Valdez in the same team, a frightening attack. And then equally, as you touched on there, they've managed to get Roman Torres, who I think brings a wealth of experience, really was impressive in Colombia from what little footage I was able to see. And I think, again, it's credit to Siggy Schmidt, because he's realised what the problem is. He's gone out and they've managed to get the players. They've managed to do the deal, keep them kind of right side of the salary cap and use this new targeted allocation money. So, you know, it shows it can be done. It shows that perhaps this idea that the league is pandering to the Galaxy a little bit is maybe a misnomer, because other teams are finding ways to use these new assets in inventive and beneficial ways.
The New York Red Bulls, 3-0 winners over Toronto FC. As impressive as the scoreline itself is, I think probably what stands out is that they kept TFC off the board and they kept Sebastian Giovinco from scoring a goal. It seems like forever since he hasn't scored one. The clean sheet and the team performance, three different goal scorers, Gonzalo Verón. I mean, everything is just going well for the Red Bulls right now.
Yeah, funny enough, it was 6 months last week since that town hall meeting, the infamous town hall meeting. That was an amazing watch for anyone who wasn't lucky enough to get down there. I think it's the pace of this team that really unsettles teams. And I saw Jesse Marsh touch on it at halftime. Toronto were trying to slow the game down so that their kind of star players, the likes of Giovinco, could then make a play. And I think if you watch Toronto, that's often how they've been able to succeed this season, is really dropping the pace so that space opens up for their key guys to make something. That wasn't the case against the Red Bulls. In fact, Giovinco only had two shots, and there was a fantastic stat from Peter Galindo that said that only New England had reduced him to less, and that was with him only playing 45 minutes of the game. So you have to credit Jesse Marsh, because he's come in and he's made some bold decisions. He's shunned this idea of signing star names when a lot of the teams around him have done that. Even their neighbours in blue have done that. And yet he's decided to forge a team where it's all about the sum of the parts. It's all about how does everybody contribute? How does everyone work? I think he's raised the level of Dax McCarthy as well. I think in Mike Grella, he's got someone who, from a kind of more poetic side, it's nice to see a local guy really thriving at that club, mm-hmm. but also brings immense talent and is really quite skillful as well. So you have to give credit to him. I think even if he doesn't take them to MLS Cup final this season, they've already improved their points per game average to where it was last year. And at present, it's higher than DC United as well. So if we're giving Ben Olsen a lot of credit for the way he's operating, I think you have to give just as much to Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, and I think we have to give it to Ali Curtis as well. He came in, it was a new program for him. It was new on the job. They've made some very smart signings. That team has a very Galaxy-type feel to it, in the sense that they have a couple of name players, not big name stars like the Galaxy, but certainly name players, and then sprinkled in are these role players who have stepped up their game and been a very big part of that success this season. Mike Grellick jumps to mind immediately. Let me before I let you go, we got to talk to Sean Johnson. Let me ask you about NYCFC. Like I said, Thursday night they beat DC United 3-1. Second half performance was brilliant. Kwadwo Poku was the star, and I'm in the bag for Kwadwo Poku, Christian. I think he's fantastic. I'd love to see him get all their minutes down the stretch. And I really hope that Jason Kreis finds a way to get him on the field more often than not. I've been asked to ask you about him because you wrote about Kwadwo Poku. Give me a sense of what kind of player we're seeing here and what kind of future he might have. I mean, he's not exactly young, but there's loads to be excited about.
Well, off the field, he is an absolute gentleman. I spoke to people at the club who said he starts every sentence with sir and ends it with sir. He really is a good character. And I think even if you kind of push that to the side on the field, his physical stats are amazing. The way he glides past players, I wrote comparisons to Yaya Toure, which at the time was deemed as quite sensationalist and stuff like that. And I understand why, but I think now having seen him for a few months, I would hope those people now see what I meant, because he does just leave people in his wake. And his ability to carry the ball, even though it seems like it's going to escape him, is incredibly impressive. And for me, it's been really central to a lot of New York's good play this summer. I think that the issue with him, and one that Jason Kreis has encountered, is that because he hasn't come from an academy, because there's not maybe that education that a lot of young players get, he's a little bit naive to the game sometimes in terms of how to operate, how he needs to be, where he needs to be. And that can take some time to teach someone. And I think, you know, in bringing him on, I think they knew that. And they've tried to work with him. But equally, it comes to the point where you just think it's worth letting him go at this point. Just let him play and continue to work with him and develop that. Because at the minute, there's potential, I think, just a little bit of potential that he could earn them their first decent money transfer to Europe, because he is just that good. His passing is brilliant. I think a lot of, as I've touched on there, his physical stats are impressive. And he's a good person to top it all off, which makes it that much easier when you're trying to move to Europe. It's just how Jason Kreis uses him. I think in a difficult season, this could arguably be the one good thing to come out of it.
Yep, absolutely. Definitely worth watching the development of Kwadwo Poku at NYCFC, and a man who's written about him, talked to him. Christian Hennage joining us on Soccer Morning. Christian, we've got to run. Got to talk to Sean Johnson, but I appreciate the time, insight on two different leagues across the vast ocean. You're brilliant. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Sean Johnson will join us. Chicago Fire goalkeeper, fresh off a brilliant 8-save performance against the Philadelphia Union last night. We'll talk about the season and more with Sean Johnson. Don't go anywhere. Be right back.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
All right, here we go. Monday edition of Soccer Morning. Happy to be joined on the phone by Chicago Fire goalkeeper Sean Johnson, fresh off a 3-3 draw at the Philadelphia Union last night. Sean, how are you, man?
I'm good.
You know, last night was crazy. I watched that game on television. I can't imagine what that last 20 minutes was like for you, having to come up with a bunch of big saves just to keep your team in it. Just, you know, give me a sense of how it looked from your side of things.
Yeah, I think it was a game that provided, a lot of different scenarios and situations over the course of 90 minutes. And I think in the last 20, I think, being, 2-1, pushing the tie of the game 2-2 and then going down 3-2 again, I think, scenario changed for us. So we needed to push, to get a goal to tie the game. And, they had a, an attacking barrage there for maybe 20 minutes. But, that's what some games call for. You have to step up in those moments and help your team to get a result.
Obviously it's been a difficult year for the Fire. You guys are probably not where you want to be. I don't imagine. Just when you're tackling a game like that, I mean, it's on the road in Philadelphia. It's kind of got to be 3 points at this point. How do you feel about it when you get back level late in a match after going down? I mean, there's some thrilling element to it, but at the same time, it's not what you wanted.
Yeah, I think, it's two sides to that. I think, one, obviously at this point in the year, 3 points are very important to us. And, you know, we're not in a position where we can afford to really let points slip. But, you know, in another sense of the word, we put ourselves in a position, you know, where we got down twice in the game, we were able to fight back. And I think that speaks, you know, volumes for the character of our players. And, we need that attitude going forward, to be able to have the belief that, you know, in any situation, we can, you know, get back into the game or dictate a game. So that, I think that was huge for us as well.
There's a number of young guys on this team. I mean, obviously, we got Harry Shipp and there's some other talented players, and Matt Polster has been good this year. There's certainly something to build on, but how difficult is it when you guys look up and you see the standings and you kind of recognize where you are to be focused on this year when that talent is something that could really come to the forefront next year and you guys could really be a contender? I mean, how do you deal with the situation as it exists? And this being MLS, I guess you get a good run going, maybe you're thinking playoffs again.
Yeah, you know, I think the important thing to remember is that, you know, the playoffs are still very much a possibility. No one, especially our players on the staff, on the team, count us out. So we've got to go into every game with the mindset that, you know, we can get 3 points, you know, focus on the game at hand, then move forward and try to keep building. You know, I think it's a league in the past. I've seen a lot of crazy things happen. I've seen crazy runs. I've been a part of a crazy run myself a couple of years ago. So I think just keeping that belief is the most important thing at this point, and not looking forward, you know, to next year. And I think we live in the now, if you will, and we've got to take care of business as it stands.
You know, speaking of the now, again, I mentioned some guys that are talented players in the Chicago Fire system, and obviously Frank Gallup's a very experienced coach who's had success in this league. There seemed to be some rotation last night. You guys had just come off the disappointing loss to Philadelphia in the Open Cup. How much of that is just trying to shake things up? I mean, I'm not asking you to get into Frank's head, but at this point in the year, how much of that is just shaking things up, and how much of it is fatigue for a team in a long campaign?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think you know, as a manager, you have to do just that and manage. I think, you know, we have a lot of games, quite a lot of games in the past month and a half. It's been a very tough stretch for us coming from, you know, Portland being on turf. You know, a lot of things factor into those decisions. And, you know, ultimately, we have a lot of depth on the team and guys that can step in at any point in time and more than capable of leading us to get points. And, you know, that's exactly it. You know, in the game last night, you know, a lot of guys, you know, stepped up to the plate and, helped us battle back and get a valuable point on the road. And, I'm sure you'll see that, you know, throughout the rest of the year. You have to have a full roster prepared and ready to contribute at any point in time.
How are you? I mean, how settled do you feel? I mean, you've been with the Fire forever. It seems like, I mean, 2010 you joined the Fire. I mean, you're at I don't even know how many appearances you have, or how many appearances, if you even know how many it is at this point, but. You know, do you think about your future? Do you have a future beyond the Chicago Fire? Is this a place where you feel comfortable enough to stick it out for quite some time?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I've been at this club a long time now, in 6 years. You know, I couldn't tell you how many games I've played, but, you know, I've been thankful for you know, all the, you know, the coaches that have been through this organization and all the faces I've seen, the people I've met, the experiences I've had to this point. You know, I'm a player that has, you know, aspirations to be the best at what he does, you know, play at the top level. And, you know, whether that's, you know, going to see the same in Chicago, I think, you know, the future will be what it will be. You know, you can't really look too far ahead, right. Past the moment, right. Putting the moment now, and the moment is, you know, trying to get this team in the playoffs. You know, it's been an important goal of mine to be successful in this league and to win some silverware. So that's what I want to focus on now. And whatever happens in the future, you know, I'll leave that up to where the chips may fall.
All right, fair enough. You know, this is also a team that you know, has a strong following in Chicago, but maybe not quite where a lot of people think it should be. And you know, obviously, you know, success breeds more attention, especially in a city like Chicago. Mm-hmm. There are fans who aren't happy right now with the way things are going, and I'm not going to ask you to talk ill about your bosses, But are you guys as fans, as players, aware of what the fans are saying and some of the upset out there in the community? I know you're out there busting your butt, but you know there are some fans out there trying to make some noise about the direction of this team. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely being aware, you know, I can understand the frustrations of our fans. You know, like I said, I've been here for 6 years. You know, I've been around a lot of these fans, and you know, we've really tried. You know, as players, we're also disappointed in how things have gone to this point. You know, we're obviously not where we want to be at this point in the season. But you know, like I said, we've got to keep looking forward, looking up, keeping a positive attitude. And you know, our fans have been great. For years. So you know, for the organization, for ourselves, for our fans, you know, we really want to be a successful team, and that's our goal. The goal we set out at the beginning of every year, you know, especially this year with the talent that we have on this team. So, you know, we've just got to keep looking forward to try to make sure that we do all that we can to give ourselves a chance of making these playoffs at the end of the year.
All right, to a completely different note, I'll turn hard left here and ask you a question. Rob in California wants to know if you had any non-American goalkeeping heroes as a kid. I mean, obviously the U.S. produces goalkeepers like nobody's business, Sean. You're part of that great lineage. But were there foreign goalkeepers you looked up to, guys playing overseas?
Yes. You know, as a kid, Edwin van der Sar was my favorite goalkeeper growing up. Favorite foreign goalkeeper, hands down. Growing up, I watched him. Fantastic. From Fulham to Manchester United. You know, I was able to kind of keep track as a kid, and that's really what sparked my love for goalkeeping. I think he was unbelievable and one of the best to ever do it. So he would be the guy that I would say that I most looked up to as a kid growing up.
Did you choose to be a goalkeeper, or did some coach look at you and go, "Hey, you're big, tall, and athletic. Go play goal."
that's how it seems to happen quite often. But no, I was 12, and we needed a goalkeeper to fill in for our team, and you know, just wanted to step in and help my team any way I could. And you know, after that game, I fell in love with the position, and I thought I found it, you know, almost an adrenaline rush to be back there, you know, and be that last rock to help the team out. And you know, that ever since I was 12, I told my parents, you know, I really want to get into this. I want to do as much training as possible and become the best that I can be. And my parents are fully supportive. You know, was fortunate, you know, to have that support as a kid and going right up through college and then landing here at Chicago Fire. It's been an unbelievable journey so far.
You know, so there's a lot of skills a goalkeeper can work on, you know, in training and over their development of their career. But it seems to be that stuff like reaction saves, like you made several times last night against the Union, maybe that's more just natural ability and instinct than it is something you can actually train for. Can you train for those stops where you're having to drop in a split second, get a paw out, and knock something aside?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think, you know, preparation is the most important thing. And you put yourself through a ton of scenarios in training, and your objective is to you know, go through every possible scenario and situation training, you know, so that you're ready for pretty much anything in a game. And you know, Aaron Hyde, I've worked with him for 6 years as well. He's my goalkeeper coach. He's done a fantastic job of preparing me, you know, game in, game out over the years, both physically, mentally, and seeing as much as possible and just being ready for anything at any given time. So yes, I would say more so than anything, training and preparation, be able to put yourself through those reactionary exercises and drills. But when you get in the game, in the moment, it's down to trusting yourself, trusting your instinct, and making the right decision.
Sean Johnson, goalkeeper of the Chicago Fire, joining us on Soccer Morning off of a 8-save performance against the Philadelphia Union last night at PPL Park, helping his team to a point on the road. Next week, you guys have Colorado. That's not the best team in the league, but what goes into the preparation as you look ahead to the Rapids?
Yeah, I think you know, the most important thing is that's a home game. It's a home game for us where we can go back to Toyota Park and play in front of our faithful and fans. And you know, I think it's important for us to realize, you know, at this point in the season, you know, every game is the most important game of the season from here on out. And you know, especially at home, we've got to take advantage of those situations. You know, Colorado can't be overlooked. You know, they're in a similar position to us at the moment. You know, with the Western Conference the way it is, you know, obviously, you know, they're trying to press and get themselves going as well at this point. So it's going to be a battle, and I think it's going to be two teams who really need to win at this point. And you know, I stress need, because at this point in the season, it's crucial to pick up points. And if you can pick up points and keep building and building momentum going forward, you never know where you're going to end up at the end of the year. And no one's given up to this point, including Colorado. So it should prove to be a pretty exciting contest.
Beauty of MLS. It's not over till it's over. Sean Johnson with the Chicago Fire, traveling back to Chicago, joining us today. Sean, appreciate the time. Great job last night. Best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
There goes Sean Johnson. Good stuff from him. I very much appreciate his time today. Let's take a break. When we come back, take a couple of your phone calls. You want to jump in on a Monday. It's Soccer Morning on WorldSoccerTalk.com. Be right back.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
The race to win the MLS Supporter Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from six of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Liga, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com. This Sunday is the Battle of DPs as Steven Gerrard, Andrea Pirlo, Giovanni Dos Santos, Frank Lampard, and Robbie Keane battle it out in a clash between the LA Galaxy and New York City FC. I'll be calling the game on Rabble.tv, and I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the 90 minutes at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast? Call one of your team's games. It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern for LA Galaxy versus New York City FC on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Monday. I am having a good time today. Hope you are as well. Sean Johnson was fantastic. Christian Hennage was excellent as always. That music just doesn't want to go away. It wants to stick around. It wants to be part of the party. We are taking your phone calls at 646-832-3909. That's 646-832-3909. It's not particularly easy to remember, but if you program it into your phone or write it on your hand in permanent marker, it's what I recommend, really, then you'll always have it with you, and you'll be able to call me up and talk about soccer, because that's what we do. Bundesliga results from the weekend. I am resolving, now that Fox has the package, now that there's an opportunity to see these games some places that are accessible to me, I'm resolving to watch some Bundesliga. I watched exactly zero Bundesliga this week. No, I watched a couple minutes. I can't remember who I watched, maybe it was Bayern on Friday. That was the opener against Hamburg. It was a romp. 5-0 for the defending champions. For the only team in Germany that you actually expect to go and win the title. That being said, the Bundesliga can be fascinating from 2 all the way down to 20. Or they have 18. How many teams in the Bundesliga, Trevor? I should probably know that off the top of my head. I apologize. Bayern Munich opening up with a 5-0 win over Hamburg at home. A Bayer Leverkusen a winner over Hoffenheim. Dortmund 4-0 over Champions League qualifier Gladbach. That's quite the romp for the post Jurgen Klopp era beginning in Dortmund. You had Hertha Berlin 1-0 winner over Augsburg on the road. Ingolstadt big win over Mainz 1-0. Important win for Ingolstadt. Cologne 3-1 winners over Stuttgart. Wolfsburg 2-1 winners over Eintracht. I think that's my team. I think Wolfsburg's my team. Is that a bad pick? It's a good pick, right? Bundesliga people, tell me. Good pick, bad pick? Wolfsburg. Yes, no, maybe? Am I front running if I pick Wolfsburg? New hipster pick, says Trevor. Yes! I have succeeded in picking a team blindly with no reading whatsoever that happens to be the new hipster pick. All right. I'm all in. I'm not really a hipster, but I'm all in on Wolfsburg. All right. And I like saying Wolfsburg with the V instead of the W. I don't know if it makes me sound refined or stupid, but I do enjoy saying Wolfsburg. 646-832-3909. The deal with this part of the show, and if you're not familiar with Soccer Morning, let me fill you in. If you're new, first of all, thank you for listening. Thank you so much for partaking in our little soccer program that happens every morning. During the week, Monday through Friday, from 9 until 10 Eastern time. We're also on Sirius XM FC 85. Go check that out if you have a subscription. If you don't, I highly suggest buying one. I'm sorry, this is my sell portion of the program, because it's a good time. Lots of good stuff over there. But if you're not familiar with the web show, which is what this is, the worldsoccertalk.com version of the show, we stick around after 10 o'clock only if you people call me. That's it. Otherwise, it's pretty much, hey, you know what? That was a good time. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you. So, I'm looking at the clock. I'm looking at the phones. I'm looking at my computer. I don't see any calls. 646-832-3909. Usually, at least one of you guys, Roberto in Connecticut, Robert in LA. Who else do we have? We have Richard in Philly, who I haven't heard from in a while, I don't think. Our friend Washington up in NYC. I mean, I'm just naming some of the regulars. You don't have to be a regular to call in, clearly. Our boy Eddie in Brooklyn, who may be busy, may be working, I don't know. I mean, these people have jobs. I understand you people have jobs. But you got to sneak away. You got to pull the Washington. The best thing about a Washington phone call
is that you can tell that he's very close to the phone like this. So he calls me up and he says, hey, Jason, what's up?
I don't have Washington's voice, but...
Hey, Jason, what's... Yeah, I really thought that Poku played well on Thursday night, and I really think he's one for the...
That's my favorite part of a Washington phone call. Love that. Lots of good technique, mic technique from Washington when he calls in. All right, we are getting a couple of calls. We'll continue on until you guys get tired of me or me of you, or we get to 10:15, either one, whichever comes first. 646-832-3909. There's Bundesliga... There's MLS, there's Premier League, there's Liga MX, there's lots of things happening around the world's game. There's the Spanish Super Cup today. Tell me if you think Barcelona can overcome a 4-0 deficit against Athletic Bilbao. I mean, first of all, that's a stunning first leg. Oh, Ray in Milwaukee, that's a regular I forgot. It's my boy Ray in Milwaukee. What's up, Ray?
What's up? Do you think that the MLS should implement some type of flex schedule?
Yes.
Yes,
they have. Well, okay. Look, first of all, let's say this, right? We got a fun match last night between the Fire and the Union. But if you were looking at the schedule ahead of time and you were saying national television, Fox Sports 1, big time potential for an audience, maybe not, but you know, got to build your audience. We don't want to put that game on TV, right? We don't want to put that game on TV.
Right.
But, I mean, again, the game ended up being entertaining.
But I mean, from a casual, I consider myself a casual MLS fan.
You're not going to watch that game.
MLS.
Yeah, I know. You're not going to watch that game if you see it on the schedule. So, yeah, flex schedule would be nice, but It's important to remember. I'm probably all flushed because I just coughed. It's important to remember that it cost a lot of money to put a game on television. It cost a lot of money to get all the cameras together, to get your staff, to get your broadcast crew to that location, and changing on the fly only adds to those costs. And let's be honest, the MLS is not the NFL. And while the NFL broadcasters who spend $1 billion and more on those rights can comfortably justify switching something 3 weeks out, I don't think ESPN or Fox are willing to do that for a game that's going to draw 250,000 people, 300,000 people, 500,000 people. They're not going to do that.
Do you think Fox or ESPN will ever go to like a local regional market like the NFL does? So they can just show the local coverage, though. You know what I'm saying?
Instead of the national team. Every MLS team has a local package. The quality of those packages and that coverage ranges wildly across the league. I don't think you would want to. They've done that before, by the way. Fox Soccer used to do it. They used to simulcast stuff like that all the time. Maybe not for league matches. I can't remember. I think that that's dangerous because of that quality issue. And I think you want to project a consistent front, right? I mean, you want to put the league on the best footing possible on television, and that means having John Strong calling the game because he's brilliant at it. I mean, you want that. So I don't think that's coming anytime soon. And the NFL doesn't do that exactly. Those are still national teams national broadcast teams that they send out all over the country. I mean, there's no actual local broadcast team for NFL because every game is nationally televised.
Right, but there are regional markets.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so you're saying like if we got a bunch of games happening at one time, some of the country gets one game, some of the country gets another game. That could be the future of the league. Yeah, that could be the future of the league. I think it's a long way off, though.
Oh, I see. And there's one other point that I just like to make up. Switching south of the border, I know that Omar Bravo became the all-time leading goal scorer for Chivas over the last week. And I know for a team, a fan base that does not get a lot to celebrate, that's some accomplishment. And I just like to say that he was a class act when he was at Kansas City.
I can't remember if that was – I don't think that was a great experience for anybody, but I don't know that it was any problems. Thanks for the call, Ray. Appreciate it, man.
Yep.
All right, there goes Ray in Milwaukee. Hotbed. Let's talk to our boy, speaking of the devil.
Hey, Jason. It's Washington. Hey, Washington.
Hey, Jason. How you doing? It's Washington.
It's my man. All right. What's on your mind, Washington?
That impression was spot on, man. I didn't give it to you. That impression was spot on. Hey, listen. If it's okay, I wanted to talk a little bit, Kwando Poku.
The man's brilliant, isn't he? He's so fun. So fun.
I love that kid.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's got it all. I saw Thursday's game, and I thought, well, once DC United scored, I said, oh, here we go again. And you know, I expected Villa, I expected Trillo to do their thing, but this kid always comes through. What I love most, he's 23. His best years are ahead of him, and he's made. I mean, I don't know if you know this. He's actually built his career. He's from Ghana, but he's built his career in the U.S.
Oh yeah.
I think he played in Georgia, and he played in Atlanta for a while. And I love this kid. I love this kid. We need like 12 more like him.
He's a great story because of what you said. I don't know. I got to go read the piece that Christian Hennage wrote about him. The background has got to be interesting from him jumping from Ghana, which, you know, Ghana gets scouted. It's not as though every kid with talent gets out of Ghana and goes to Europe. And frankly, there's a lot of bad things happening with African players ending up in Europe. So maybe he dodged a bullet there, actually. But there's got to be an interesting story for him going from Ghana to Georgia, playing for the Georgia Force, which is one of those big massive clubs, youth clubs that has thousands of kids and hundreds of teams, and then ending up with the Atlanta Silverbacks, and then ending up in New York. He's just so fun to watch. As Christian said, he's an incredibly polite kid. I saw a little bit of his interview after that match. He looked, he looks like he's the kind of person who just, is very appreciative of where he is and the opportunity he's getting. And that might mean that he doesn't have the personality to continue to demand things out of, say, Jason Kreis, which I get. But you want, maybe we build him up a little bit. Maybe we get Claude Wapoko to start saying, look, I want to be part of this team. And if you're not going to give me my opportunity, eventually I should move on. Maybe that's not now. You know, and maybe it's a matter of selling. I mean, look, Christian Jimenez.
Let's not put any ideas in his head, Jason.
Let's
keep him in NYCFC now.
Fair enough.
Speaking of that, let me ask you a question. Because I know that Miami and, Atlanta and LA started in, I think, 2017. How does that work with the expansion draft? Can they just pick any kid they want, or are they kids that get protected? How does that work exactly?
Teams are allowed to protect, I think it's 11. I can't remember exactly the number of players you're allowed to protect, but you can't protect everybody.
We need to protect this kid.
Yeah.
We need to hold on to this
kid. Yeah, here let me just go ahead and review. I'm trying to review the per MLS rules. I'm just trying to figure out how many players. I mean, again, it's like sort of a different situation if you get two teams coming in at once, as you did with NYCFC in Orlando.
Right, in Orlando.
Existing teams are allowed to protect 11 players from their rosters. Generation Adidas players were automatically protected. Those players who graduated from the program to the senior roster at the end of 2014 were not. Let's see.
Poku is not Generation Adidas. He came from Common. So.
No, and
yeah, we need to protect this kid.
Once you lose a player, you're allowed to protect another player in his place. If you lose a player, you're allowed to add another protected player. And if you lose two players, that's it. You're done. Now, again, you got to figure out a way to protect Poku. That's bottom line.
Right.
And it's a couple years away. Maybe he ends up in Europe for $15 million. You never know.
No, let's not put ideas in his head, Jason. What are you doing?
I'm just kidding.
Maybe we make him a DP next year.
Here's your saving grace.
Anyway, then one more question. Because I know that, I'm shooting for the moon here, but after Thursday's game, when they came back, DC United is pretty up there. And after Thursday's game, I'm wondering, we can get to that sixth spot. I'm just looking at the standings. I'm like, we can get to sixth spot. So, The positions 3, 4, 5, and 6 are the wild card spots, right? They have to do the playoffs. Is that right?
It's format. I think so. Yeah. The first two teams get get byes, and everybody else has to play in the first round or whatever.
The one game playoff or something like that. So one game playoff to go into the conference semifinal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Exactly. The playing game.
Yeah, so we got a shot at that. Hey, it's not over yet.
No, you're only a point back. Only a point back. Even right now, and here's something I don't think a lot of people... Washington, I got to run. I got one more call I want to get in.
Go ahead, no problem.
All right, man, appreciate it.
Goodbye, Washington.
I don't think a lot of people would have thought we'd look up right now and see that NYCFC is better than Orlando. I'm having an issue. Issue technically speaking, but Bill from New York's on the line anyway. Bill, we'll close out with you, whether anybody can hear you or not. He'll be on the podcast.
Very good, thanks, Jason. I was calling about two things actually. The Mike Petty thing. I heard a couple people last week bring up, Mike Petty. Nobody's talking about him now. It's over and done with. He's our guy. He's always going to be our guy. But this is our team. We got to root for this team. No matter who's in charge or who's leading the team, Petty will always be our guy, but we have to root for this team. So it kills me when people say that. It's got about Petty. No, that's not the case. We haven't forgot about Petty.
Okay.
I'm the guy who's always calling about, I want the Cosmos to buy Rebels. I hate our own ship group. But it's our team, and we're going to root for them. And we haven't forgot about Petty.
Okay. All right. You just wanted to get that on the record.
I did, yes, on
all
the record.
Right.
And I was also calling about Washington. Everybody loves this guy, Washington. I'm one of the guys on board. I don't understand his love affair with New York City. He obviously is a smart guy about soccer. He knows so much about soccer. Everything that's wrong with soccer is New York City. The Yankees are going in.
We
know that.
Okay, but go ahead. You want to lay out point by point why NYCFC is the devil. Go ahead.
Yankees owning them. We know they're only doing it for the money. They care less about soccer. Yankee ownership also trying to crush the soccer spirit, locking up their own fans week after week because they don't want them standing and jumping up and down. They want them being baseball fans. They want them sitting down and clapping when they score a goal. When the game's over, they want them leaving. The whole Manchester City lied to him about Lampard. They do that because they know Americans are not smart soccer people, so they can tell them anything.
There we go.
And we can get away with this.
Bill, look, you're on the record. Unfortunately, I got to wrap up the show. Thanks for the call. I got to wrap up the show because apparently we completely dropped the audio on the live stream. I don't know why that happened. I've still got the audio working on the podcast, so the podcast version will be complete. Thanks a lot for listening, guys. Thanks to Christian Hennage for his appearance today. Sean Johnson for the Chicago Fire was brilliant as always. Go to, make sure you go to backheel.com and check us out. Just check out the website, check out the store, do all of that stuff over there. It's all cool. And we've got worldsoccertalk.com as well. Thanks very much to them and go check out that website. All right, I'm out of here. I've been told I got to close it down. We'll talk to you on Tuesday. Bye. Disappear.